Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, a show today with a couple of different topics, but we will start immediately with some fan interaction.
Yeah, fan interaction and movie recap type stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so it's going to tie into the movies. It's harkening back to our summer movie preview, as usual,
special, yes.
These parts.
Where, and I want to emphasize this now, where we predict how the movies are going to do.
Critically and financially.
Yes.
Based only on the trailers.
Yes.
That's the part I want to emphasize right now.
So we haven't seen them.
Exactly.
We're making a prediction without seeing a film. And I want to preface this before we get into this fan interaction. Anyone can go to a movie and tell you if it's any good or not. But can you go to a can you tell someone if a movie's good without seeing it?
Exactly.
And that's what
we've really built this up and kind of telegraphed our answer to
the person. So let's go. Let's do it.
So
I love our fans, all of them.
Detective Mike's wife.
Okay.
Who I'm going to have a nickname for shortly. But for the moment, she's just Detective Mike's wife.
Okay.
Sent a text our direction, got forwarded through a couple of steps. Said she was on the road traveling and just listened to the summer movie podcast and convey that we are, quote, wrong about Wonder Woman. It rocked all worlds. Also, they are dead to me.
Okay.
Meaning us.
Wow. I mean, that's quite harsh. Yeah, on the whole, so. You know, the fact
based on what, I guess, I don't even remember exactly what we said, but I don't think we said much. We didn't have high expectations for it.
I can't remember. And in fact, why don't you keep talking? I don't know if I actually have our notes. I might be able to tell you.
I left them upstairs.
No, hold on. Keep talking.
Anyway, so the point being, the movie, which I have seen and is actually quite good, and we will point out in a moment, may be in the front running for the top movie of the summer, although there's others to come out yet still.
That's fine.
We may have been off in our prediction, because I do think we predicted it lower than expected, although Zeph will confirm here in a moment what the situation was.
I just have to go through my notes, which I know traditionally can be problematic.
Yeah. I don't remember you using that notebook during the time. Is this like, did you transcribe everything after we...
No, I haven't done that yet. Wonder Woman, you said CW, which I think is critically weak.
You and your... Yeah.
And that makes money... And I said CW critically. Oh, no, I said no. CN. I'm sorry. CN. I can't read my own writing.
Critical no.
Critical no. And then you said MM, which is code for makes money. I said CN, critical no. And then I said FD, which I think is financial dog.
Well, so.
Or financial down.
So we were both wrong
so far
on critical, and you were clearly wrong on financial, because let me point out, as Box Office Mojo right now says.
Well, I also want to put some comments here. We recognized a lot of cast except the star, and I still don't know who the star is.
What,
so I'm
accurate
there.
Like you don't know her name, or you don't
know? I don't
know
who she is.
It's Gal Gadot.
Yeah, but I don't know who that is.
Well, but you're not going to know until you see it.
Okay.
Anyway. The movie so far has made $334 million domestically.
Good for it.
Which is now approaching Guardians of the Galaxy, which we thought Guardians of the Galaxy was going to do better. Presumably, it will continue to gain on Guardians of the Galaxy. It's more recent, which really puts this movie into the front-running status for biggest financial of the summer. And so
that's great.
You know, when somebody says, at least I said financial success, whereas you said financial dog. I'm pretty sure a bunch of my predictions are going to be way off, and so I'm going to relish...
Can I
lead on this? But really, back to Detective Mike's wife.
Well, you're already seeming to want to defend your opinions. And in a moment, when I reclaim the microphone to explain my perspective on this, I'm not going to be defending anything. I did say this and I did say that.
No, I'm just pointing out as we go past it. We read off the results and we were told that we are dead to
this
person.
These results are not final, though.
Well, they're final on the critical and the financial. What do you mean? Like, it's already determined what its critical reaction was, and it's already known to be a financial success.
There might be some late bills that have to come in.
Yeah, right. Like, this number is not going down. I can tell you that much. In any event, the catch to all this, I will concede being a little off on the predictions of its critical success, not unjustifiably because of the past movies, but let's point out it was based on the trailer. Right? You know, we didn't get to see the movie.
No, I'm with you.
So, to be honest, if our listener had made this prediction before they went to see the movie, had said, hey, you guys are wrong. This will rock. This is going to be a great movie.
Exactly.
That would have been more bona fide. Exactly. But to now say it rocks in retrospect, that's fine. I concede.
Again,
it rocked. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
If you go to a film and you don't know if it's any good or bad, then you really do have a problem. But if you go, again, anyone can watch a film and tell me if it's any good. We're doing it without watching it.
Right.
And because I have one of our metaphors for all of this. Now, you know how we have talked at length, because this was 50 years of Sgt. Pepper's, and we talked at length in our spring special, which was first albums. We both selected Sgt. Pepper's, I think it was first album of our parents that we listened to. You know the famous cover of Sgt. Pepper's has the Beatles, and then they're surrounded by celebrities of their time, or pictures, or wax. You know, that's that famous cover. So the Beatles are dressed in like those sort of colorful marching band outfits, and then there are rows of celebrities around them. If I show you a cover of Sgt. Pepper's and point out a face and go, who's that? You can look at it and go, yes, that's Marilyn Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
But if I stand at the other end of the room and hold up the cover and go, tell me where Marilyn Monroe is, well, suddenly it becomes a lot more difficult.
Well, Marilyn Monroe, I might be able to pick up, but I understand what you're saying, yeah.
And so that's what I'm saying. What we're doing, we're doing it from the other end of the room.
Yeah.
Whereas this person has done it up close. Anyone can go up close and go, yeah, that's good. Yeah, but we're doing it from the other end of the room. That's the genius of what it is that we do. Yep. I'm going to double down, in fact, on our ability to predict these.
I mean, just to briefly interject here before you double down on this stuff. One of the things we do have to be cautious about is Detective Mike's wife. You know, while you might want to be worried about what kind of consequences can follow from giving a hard time to police officers, Detective Mike's wife is even more dangerous than that. I won't get it deep into it, but we're talking about national security things. Also, I won't get that deep into it because I can't remember exactly what her positions have been. But she probably has a dossier on you already. I know you have a pending citizenship application involved.
Fair,
so, you might want to be careful here. I'm going to take your step. And in fact, when we mentioned this, this is all secondhand. But the response to this when I had some concern was, they should be scared. I know people. Detective Mike thinks he knows people. I know people that don't even exist kind of people.
Okay. Do they know anyone in the movie industry? Because if they don't, then it's our dossier on these films that counts and not theirs.
No. But we're talking about the
antagonism towards
our listener.
No, look, I'm not going to let any of our fans attempt to intimidate ours by throwing their weight around. I'm doubling down. Anyone can go to a film and go, yeah, it's good. Those guys don't know what they're talking about. But we didn't see the film. That's what makes us.
Already made that point.
Yeah, I know.
What are you doubling? You're doubling down in the sense you're going to repeat yourself.
Yes. Okay. That's what doubling down is. You just repeat your bet. You're like, oh, I'm doubling. I'm going to throw another $10 in. Oh, I'm doubling down. I really believe in it. To be fair, I will, in all seriously, double down. I didn't see anyone else going, this movie's going to be the greatest movie of the summer.
People expected more out of it than we might have. I mean, like, you know, like, it's not like the studio made a movie and they were like, I don't think it's going to be very good.
All right, fair enough.
I mean, there are some movies that are like that, but in any event, Detective Mike's wife is now, I think, officially Wonder Woman.
Okay. Our own Wonder Woman.
Yeah, although I was trying to decide if we should go with her alternate identity, Diana Price.
Okay, because it does sound...
What do you think? It's not an of the pod, so I'm trying to think. Wonder Woman of the pod sounds a little bit peculiar.
I mean, direct from the way she talks, she sounds more like official avenging angel of the pod, because it's a very aggressive stance to take, like you got Wonder Woman wrong, you're all dead to me.
I think avenging angel would not be an inappropriate phrase
for her. She's the one
meaning that I know her, but I'm saying avenging angel might be right.
But that's what I'm saying. She doesn't... I don't know her, which actually makes me...
It's got the... letter thing. So maybe instead of Avenging Angel.
All right.
Detective Mike's wife is Avenging Angel. It has thus been declared.
All right. So anyway, talking of movies. Now, again, the next thing we're going to talk about, if you wanted to criticize our movie preview show, Mr. Fan or Mrs. Fan, on our next movie, you would have a legitimate point if you chose to criticize us, because...
Oh no, but I have a defense to that too. But there is a segue to this that you have a personal segue, because you were going to see Wonder Woman and then
We went to see Baby Driver instead. There was a house discussion and Wonder Woman was on the table. And I didn't say it because I'm just not interested in seeing it. I'm just not interested. And I don't mean that Wonder any Woman. Which way. Yeah, I'm not interested. Yeah. And again, there's nothing.
When it comes on cable watch or something.
Well, no, I won't watch it on cable. And really? There isn't.
You're quite defiant here. Avenging Angels. Well, I think I've. Take it out on you.
Well, no, but I think I've traditionally said I don't really do these comic strip movies. I mean, if we. I don't want to get too hung up on the summer movie preview, but I think I've predicted that Spider-Man will be the biggest film of the summer. It won't be on my help because I won't be going to see it because I don't really do comic book movies.
Yeah, I guess that's one that has a shot at outstripping this one because the other ones are all out already. So
I'm Wonder Woman was there and everyone had voted. The vote was Wonder Woman or Baby Driver.
Baby Driver, by the way. I mean, should we talk about the movie or wait?
Let me finish it. So Baby Driver. And I was like, well, I'll go and see Baby Driver. And when it looked like Wonder Woman was going to get the vote, I then said, sure, I'm more than happy to drop you all off there. Because I wasn't going to see Wonder Woman.
But I thought one of the members of your household was also opposed to Wonder Woman.
Yes, and then suddenly it swung again. Like any kind of debate, it then swung.
Like, I don't want to say feminist grounds, but like exploitive type grounds.
Yes. Yeah, so, something like that. Maybe. I mean, I didn't pay any attention because I
had something to do with like all these women in these outfits kind of thing. Was it overly exploitive, or whatever the right word is for that? Yeah, yeah. Just,
yeah, I mean.
I wonder what Avenging Angel has to say about that.
Well, I've been against, but it's not. Don't avenge on us. I mean, really. But again, because I'd already decided that I'm not going, I lost interest when other people made the case for not going.
Right.
Because I'd already decided I'm not going.
But that swung everybody. Well, between that and the other components.
I think that argument did swing it, yeah. And so we all went to see Baby Driver instead.
So Baby Driver is a movie with the star... Baby, who is the character Baby Driver? Is a getaway car driver.
Well, the character's name is Baby.
Right.
His last name is a driver.
Baby.
It's not like Mini Driver.
Baby, parentheses, driver.
Yes.
Like, but it's Ansel Elgort, who we were all struggling with. I mean, it's a kid. Well, kid, 25. I mean, so like looks like a very young person, but it's still who he was. In the mid-20s. Right. So
I'm sorry. Can I interrupt you for one quick minute? The same person in the house who felt the Wonder Woman was exploitive also then made the statement, I don't like that guy.
What had she seen him in?
I don't know. I didn't get to follow up on that. But she was already familiar with his body of work. So therefore, while I don't know who he is, I do think, and as you're about to tell the listeners, he does have some freight with a certain demographic.
Well, so we were before we did this, I thought, is he one of these new names that's in one of these Star Wars or Han Solo movies? Turns out that's not the case.
Oh, I thought he was.
It's not, unless they're not listening on his IMDb page, which I doubt. His big movie was Fault in Our Stars with the two cancer kids.
Teen fiction. Basically, isn't it?
I mean, I don't know if it's teen. I guess it's probably teen-oriented. But his other big, he's one of the stars of the Divergent set of movies, which I guess is about to go on to its fourth movie.
Really?
Because I see Divergent, and I'm assuming these are Divergent, Insurgent, and Allegiant have all come out already.
Yeah, they're all related to each other. They're all Gent movies.
Then there's a pending movie coming. Actually, well, there's an Ascendant, which says TV movie.
Yeah, that's not related. It has to be Gent. The G-E-N-T is the key. That's sort of that's the conceit of it.
Allegiant is G-I-A-N-T, but...
Yeah, but it's a Gent word, isn't it? Allegiant.
So it's not coincidence that Ascendant is not...
Yeah, but that's not in the series. That's a TV movie. So it's a knockoff, isn't it? It's like when Sci-Fi Channel do stuff, you know, that's like... instead of doing like Jaws, they do like Mega Jaws. Like it's a knockoff. So it's a TV... Ascendant is a TV movie knockoff of the Divergent series. Divergence.
Ascendant's part of the Divergent series. Yeah, I don't know why it's listed as a TV movie.
Because it's not good enough to be in the films.
Well, that's kind of weird. If this is true that they're going to take a movie series and then do a TV movie with the same stars. No. This is an intriguing notion. This could be a whole other media turn.
Well, no, it's
think about it. Like with all that we've been talking about, pay per view movies and streaming movies. So if you that's not what this sounds like. This is like a full blown movie, and maybe they've decided with these series we can make better money never putting in the theater at all.
Maybe
because now you've got these movies that are going straight to Netflix or Amazon or things like
that. Yeah, that's true.
This is an interesting development.
But what I think my point about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was it was the way to sort of milk. a prior
Yeah, but that's a different thing. Okay. That's, I mean, that was like that's a TV thing, you know.
Of course, okay.
This seems like, I mean, you're literally, it's like if you did The Lord of Rings and then you suddenly decide, well, the next one we're going to go ahead and just make it into a Netflix movie or something.
Yeah, okay.
Same cast, same stars, same characters.
Oh, that. So is it the same people that are in Ascendant?
Yeah, it's I'm sitting here. Ansel Elgort, Naomi Watts, Bill Skarsgård, you know, it's all these.
I can't tell you so. If you're Avenging Angel, wife of the pod, or whatever the name is.
I don't know if she's a big Divergent fan.
If you're unhappy with our lack of knowledge on Wonder Woman, you must be tearing out your hair at my clear lack of knowledge of this movie franchise. I don't know anything about it.
So anyway, the plot, by the way, the plot of Baby Driver is he's this getaway car driver. The other stars are John Hamm from
Mad Men.
From Mad Men. Since I switch off the IMDb page, I don't have
Jamie Foxx. Is it?
No, that's right. Jamie Foxx. Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey is like the head.
Very
so
good.
Like these are major folks here. I forget the woman. His love interest is Lily somebody.
I didn't know any of that.
That's got to be somebody who we don't really know.
The other female lead, who I don't know what her name is in real life. I saw her face and I'm like, oh yeah, I know who that is, but I didn't.
The bad guy woman. Bad guy. The bad.
Yes.
Is she somebody famous?
I think she was on like CW.
Is it Elisa Gonzalez?
Yes, I think so.
Anyway, so, but it's directed by, or I guess it was written and directed by
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright, who is best known for they all fit. It's Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, and another movie with that guy.
They did the Alien. They did the one about
World's End. I know, like where they're doing a bar crawl and there's a zombie taking over.
Yes, yes.
So these are all, I've seen all those and they're all pretty good.
Yeah, Sean, what did I call him? Sean Pegg. Simon Pegg.
Yeah, yeah. Simon Pegg's in a bunch of them. So this is a little bit of a changeover. But the big hook, and I can't tell, there's a big buzz on this, which is going to segue back into our original reason why we never talked about it before. But there seems to be some sort of buzz. Like the Washington Post ran its review and two different articles about the movie itself and its background with this guy. Because apparently, I mean, starting as long ago as 20 years ago, he's been listening to music and basically designed, you know, usually you do the movie and then you try to adapt music to fit the, but he's actually taking the songs and designing his movie around the song. So like there's the article, one of the Post articles, which I should credit him.
It's like a musical.
One of the songs that Bell Bottoms, which is a John Spencer Blues Explosion song, or maybe it's just John Spencer, I can't remember. But literally two decades ago, it says he's listening to it on cassette and thinking about how this could play into a movie. And so he's been spending all this time. He made a playlist that was at some point, it was called like Maybe Babies or Baby Maybes or something like that, with 700 songs. And he eventually winnowed it down to like 35 songs. And then they all worked on the design of the movie around the beats of the song. Like the, I don't mean just by the boom, boom, boom beats, but rather here's a turn of the song. Song changes here. So we're going to have the chase change here. And so all these parts fit into it.
There were two interesting things to do with the credits. Before the movie started, there was a 30-second message where Edgar Wright looked at the camera and said, I want to thank you all for coming to see this movie. Yes, which I'd never seen before on anything. And then, so that played. And then all of a sudden it went into, I don't know if it was Paramount or Universal. I think it was Lionsgate and working title films. So then, you know, those production credits came up and then the film started. But during the credits, you know, you have like starring and then it has executive producer and music by. It also listed choreography.
I was going to say, so the choreographer is Ryan Heffington.
Yeah. So my point was, that was listed in the opening credits, and right there, it's very much like you. It is hard to explain. No, it's not hard. I think someone just heard me just say just now, it's like a musical. It is like a musical in that the music and the action and the dialogue are all coordinated to work together. I think when you go to modern films, there is a tendency when the films over the last 20 years, because we've had this discussion before, are making far more use of popular music for different reasons. Mm-hmm. You'll hear a song in the background for about 10 seconds, and then the next thing you know, you can buy the Die Hard 7 album tracks by, you know, whoever on it. What was interesting about this film was most of the songs you either heard in their entirety, which is very rare,
right,
for just what on the face of it seems like a regular action film, or you heard at least 50 to 60% of them. So every song in the film, and the film is nearly, there's music almost constantly playing for 70% of it. You are expected to hear the song. Obviously, you might recognize it. Pay attention to the lyrics. Pay attention to the beat, because what you see on the screen is coordinated, choreographed, timed to go with what you're hearing. And that did make it a slightly different film experience.
All right. Well, so the choreographer that they would have been listed there was the choreographer who put together the Sia's chandelier video. And I don't, you may not recognize
I've not seen that. No.
Well, so it's been watched on YouTube 1.6 billion times. It's the video, you may have seen it when they did a, it's with a young girl dancer in like a outfit and like running around to different places in a room, and this one long shot of the kid going around all these different places.
Oh,
and,
really?
And they did it live on, I don't remember if it was the Grammys or what it was, with Kristen Wiig.
It's a commercial?
No, no, no. It's the video for the song. Song by Sia is the musician.
Oh, see, I thought you meant Sia's. Like, no, no, Sia's where you go and get tools and
Sia is the singer. Chandelier is the song.
Okay, sorry.
Anyway, so I think you probably have seen this.
But not,
Sia's the singer. Has got the hair down her face. I think she's British, isn't she?
No, I don't know.
Anyway, but the when they did a live version of this with Kristen Wiig playing the role, or actually playing a dual role with the kid dancer going around there. And I think the kid dancer is from some dance TV show too. I mean, it's all this stuff is interconnected now. Anyway, so this choreographer, who was there dancing in the movie?
No.
So they must have choreographed the chases.
Yes.
The choreographer who choreographed people dancing and moving around choreographed something else.
Well, there's actually also quite a lot of scenes where the dialogue plays out, not necessarily to the music, but to a beat.
Right.
Without getting too far
into it. Yeah, I don't want to give, there's some things that are given away in some of these articles.
Well, I didn't want to get into it. You know, for example, the lead communicates with another character by sign language, because that character is deaf. So therefore, you've got lots of sort of almost mime type movements.
Right. So maybe there's some choreography.
So that happened. Yeah, I do think, and again, I just found it notable for what on the face of it is a sort of, you know, heist, car chase, run of the mill. I mean, it easily could have been that, but it was very well done. I really enjoyed it.
One other tidbit from the Washington Post articles, which by the way are by Stephanie Mary and Sonny Bunch, so two different people. I thought they were by the same person, but they the guy who's this director is friends with the director of Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Okay.
And, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 has a traditional, like, bringing a bunch of obscure songs as soundtrack stuff. Like,
yeah.
there's a plot device for that if you haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy. But a lot of old-timesy 70s, 80s songs from America.
Well, then
put into a space movie, kind of interesting. But
I do see that in terms of using the music. Like I say, over the last, you know,
but again,
5, 10 years,
Guardians, just there. Guardians of the Galaxy, it isn't simply that the songs are in the background. It's there's a plot thing where the person plays the songs.
Okay.
Like they have a tape from their mother or whatever the heck it is. But anyway, they had a whole dialogue before the movies were coming out, because they were worried that they would have each other's songs. You know, like when you get your song, you don't want it to be out there. Like there's a comment in this that one of the songs apparently appeared in a Nike ad. This director is like, oh, man. And then they were like, eh. Nike ads, fine, I'll go with that. But what they didn't want to have is like them have the same songs. And so they had a series of emails or texts between each other where they were like, do you have a Marvin Gaye song in yours?
Oh,
no, it's none of that. And so like they didn't give away what they had, but they made sure that they weren't going to overlap on any songs.
The soundtrack for Baby Driver, and I feel a bit bad now just calling it the soundtrack, because it is far more integral to the action occurring on screen. Very heavily, a lot of late 60s soul.
Well, it's interesting.
It's 70s rock. So quite, but what I'm saying is that I recognized most of the tracks.
I can tell you, right. So Stephanie Berry's article has embedded in it the Spotify playlist of all the songs. So it goes, so if you go to this article, you can just play them. Like, here, look, I'll touch it because we happen to have this thing here.
Yeah, do it.
See if it works. Might not work on my computer. Anyway, it's like an embedded here. You see right here where it has, you know, the Spotify list, and it has all the songs there, which are not cooperating, but that I think that's a computer. Oh, you know why? Because I'm in an edit mode. Never mind. But it has all these songs. So if you wanted to hear the songs, I think you can go straight to the article and play them live, stream them, or do whatever you want to do to have your playlist.
Yeah, so anyway, we actually did not mention this film in the Selma movie preview.
Long way which was, again, not our fault, because Nobody talked about it. Like, Entertainment Weekly has a bunch of things and has more than we ever talk about, and had no mention of this other than in its, like, rundown of movies that were being released. And I think if you were to ask the people there, given what this movie is getting attention for now,
it's like a 98%.
They would have absolutely, they would have given this like a whole page and a half in there about,
it's hot.
Well, because, and it's also doing something interesting. Yes. And somebody would have said, geez, you know, this is cool and young and hip and music and all this.
Well, I saw a trailer for it when I went to see the Alien movie, and the trailer came on and I'm like, oh, Kevin Spacey. Oh, Jamie Foxx. Oh, cars. But I didn't sit there and because I knew nothing about it. I'm just watching a trailer going, oh, this looks like some other movie aimed at teens. Maybe they're trying to get in some Fast and Furious fans. Like, I was very throwaway about it. And then only this week with the press, the overarching majority of very positive reviews, the fact that we discussed it, I'm like, yeah, but better give that a go. And like I say, I went opening day, which I never do, and cinema was packed. And, you know, like I said, when I left the film, I'm like, wow, yeah, it's a really good film.
All right. Well,
so there you go.
It's more about movies than we anticipated doing at the start.
Yeah, so let's get on with the show.
Next topic. Yeah, right. Next topic, for Senior Scientist of the Pod, which, by the way, I think last time I mentioned his name, I wasn't quite sure of his new title, but it's Senior Scientist, if you can believe that. That's his actual job title.
I think we had him as Scientific Consultant.
But right, yeah, okay, but now it's actually, and this actually fits his title in real life.
We discussed, remember in the last show, we got all hung up on the comedian from the movie Time Machine? Orlando Jones.
Yes.
Right, it drove me bananas, so I had to look it up on IMDb. Right, so, again, if you're listening at this moment and you don't know what we're talking about, then you know something? You're guilty of not listening to the last episode.
So, Senior Scientist of the Pod sent us a very brief mention. Senior Scientist of the Pod has a subscription to,
Science Daily.
It's Science Daily, which is like, you know, I get a lot of blurbs from him about scientist thing, pointing out that...
I will quote, a leading astrophysicist from Queen's University Belfast has warned that an asteroid strike is just a matter of time. Professor Alan Fitzsimmons from the university's Astrophysics Research Center has said it is a case of when an asteroid collision will happen rather than if it will happen.
Right. It points out that, okay, so...
The
reason is... No. Well, so the point being, Asteroid Day was coming. I didn't know there was an Asteroid Day.
No, I didn't
talk about that in more detail. But Asteroid Day was June 30th.
Yes, which was the day I went to the cinema. If I had known that Friday was Asteroid Day, I might have been scanning the skies rather than laughing it up in the cinema.
Rented Armageddon or something But the Asteroid Day, so, and the reason it's that day is because that's the day in 1908 where the I was about to say Tuskegee, but it's Tunguska.
Tunguska, which we've covered on our old shows, right, yeah.
Blows up this thing. And, you know, it is funny when you think about that, and we're going to talk more about this seriously. You know, they're pointing out, I mean, this was just over 100 years ago, and if an asteroid like that asteroid hit an actual populous area, it would be just major league devastation. Could blow out a whole, like, city. So,
can I... And I want to backpedal here for a moment. You have been very dismissive of me for having...
You're really setting yourself up as a victim in many respects in this podcast.
You've said to me, oh, yes, you have been dismissive of my fear of asteroids.
No, I have not.
So I actually did some research here. Your chances of being struck by lightning are 1 in 960,000. All right. So people get hit by lightning. Your chances of being struck by an asteroid are 1 in 1.6 million, which is not that much. More than being hit by lightning.
How can that be?
Hold on.
Where's that stat coming from? I don't mean like location, but what's the math that they're using? Is this over a course of a... See, we had this debate before. This is a repeat, but over what time frame?
I think all the same, but I think within a year. But your odds of
It can't be. It's not 1 in a million people.
Your odds of being bit by a shark are 1 in 3.7 million. Yeah, I see those shark attack stories all the time on TV, and I defend my concern about asteroids because your actually chances of getting hit by an asteroid are more than getting bit by a shark.
Yeah, well,
rest my case with questioning, that sign. That's math.
I'm questioning
that's math,
that math. I'm not disparaging the risk, and we're going to talk about how serious it is, given all the attention it's getting.
You have a 1 in 63 chance of dying from the flu. Maybe my notes actually could be wrong now, because like, that doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it's clearly not a year. I mean,
over your life, I don't know.
But one again, in 63 people die from the flu ever.
I don't know, but the numbers don't lie.
Well, they do lie, apparently. They may not lie, but they may be stupid.
So anyway,
which led to, I had not realized there was this asteroid day, which led to, I just ran a Google search on asteroid day. It turns out, if you want to know about this asteroid stuff, the website, asteroidday.com, is
and there are some
a full-blown set of statistics here. And so let's real quickly play the video that they have here.
Because there are some big names attached to asteroid day.
So I want to emphasize that Asteroid Day is a movement to float all boats.
Asteroid Day began in
2015, voicing over,
gathering the best and brightest asteroid experts together with a large community of concerned citizens.
I've known some of the people behind Asteroid Day for
Peter Gabriel, musician, activist.
Yes. They're smart people. So when they asked if I would help, I took it very seriously.
Through the collaboration of Brian May, astrophysicist and legendary guitarist and songwriter for Queen.
More about that later. Yeah.
Greg Richter's director of 51 Degrees North, a sci-fi thriller about an asteroid impact. They enlisted the expertise of Apollo 9.
Do you think this is Brian May in the background?
Probably, yeah.
Silicon Valley operative.
Is right again behind it.
To grow the movement.
I forget who she is. She's maybe like a Google person. I can't
remember. In just the first year, scores of astronauts, notable scientists, artists, and leading astronomers launched Asteroid Day by creating independently organized events at schools, museums, science centers, astronomy clubs, and in film and on television.
Asteroid Jimmy Kimmel, Day show him
engages
here.
Engages millions of people worldwide in support of increased efforts to find hazardous asteroids. Before hazardous asteroids, find us.
The tagline is best.
The dinosaurs never saw that asteroid coming. What's our excuse?
Okay, fair enough. So basically, asteroid aid is what it sounds like. A whole lot of celebrities and musicians getting together live to aid, help asteroids.
Well, I mean, listen, there's some point to be made there. It's but if you want to really, if you want to see the serious Peter stuff
Gabriel,
about it, you
Peter
go to this
Gabriel
website.
Peter Gabriel was concerned that an asteroid would hit us like a sledgehammer.
Yeah. Right, you should sing a little so you can put it into the greatest hits clips.
No, I've already done that for you.
Interestingly, it is a funny thing. I mean, get aside from the risk, but the notion of the risk, it's like those stats, those don't make any sense. Like, lightning strikes happen on a continuous basis. I forget about what the numbers are, but lightning strikes happen on a continuous basis. Asteroids don't happen. Asteroids are more like a nation. I'm making a serious point. What do you mean? Like, I'm not making a facetious point. This is a serious point to be. Let me get in the way here. I'm going to make a serious point. The point being, it is a sort of a black swan event that could be hugely catastrophic, and so people should pay attention to it and do things. But how do you get people to care about something that might happen once every 100 years? It might be devastating, but it's not expected. It's not even like nuclear war where you could say, well, we should do things because we can change the way we behave. It's a freak of nature, literally.
But your answer there is in what you said. It's devastating. Like, there are a lot of people that bit by a shark, but they live. Car accident. People live. Right. Lightning, a lot of them live. Asteroids, game over. And so you've got to take it seriously, whatever the odds, because there's no in between.
Right. But so
sharks,
then,
like, oh wow, the shark, I was attacked by a shark, but I hit him on the head and was able to survive. That doesn't happen with an asteroid. As T points out, right. It wiped out the dinosaurs.
Yeah, you don't get a bunch of people who say, oh, you know, that time I got hit by an asteroid. Yeah. They're not there to say that, you know, and certain asteroid strikes might not even hit. I mean, I guess what could happen, that's sort of a tangential thing, is if you destroy the economy of the world or a nation or something like that, you might not be the one killed, but you might end up starving to death as a result of what happens.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like
there's secondary effects to the asteroid.
Okay.
In theory.
Okay.
But there's, you know, there's got to be even this, you know, the one that we talk about from 100 years ago, it devastated something like 800 square miles, but it's not like that had a tangible global effect for a long time. So we could have, if you had something like that
we know of,
Well, that's true.
There you go. You see,
some people talk about like the plumes from it. But,
yeah,
you know, so how do you make the world pay any attention to this? Apparently with Brian May.
You enlist aging rockers who haven't released any singles in a while.
Yeah.
But Brian May of Queen, we should play some Queen, really. Is he the long-haired guitarist?
Yeah.
Because my mom, bless her, she knows the drummer from Queen.
Is he mates? Oh yeah,
yeah, but I can't remember his name. It's the worst like celebrity name drop that I have because I can never remember the drummer's name. So I just go, my mom knows the drummer from Queen.
Now, is Brian May related to James May? Because they look pretty similar.
They just got long hair and they're the same age.
Well, they both have a similar face to them.
You think? They just look old.
Well.
They just look old and wearing inappropriate hair for their age. Brian May, anyway, lead guitarist of, I'm going to call him lead guitarist and a songwriter for Queen, but he's actually also an astrophysicist.
Well, that's the thing. Like, so when they said they're like, oh, guitarist and astrophysicist.
In asteroids.
And so I thought to myself at first, I thought, well, that's got to be like he got into this thing and maybe he did a little bit of schooling and they gave him some sort of honorary degree or something.
No, I think he's all the way in.
No, it turns out. So before he was in the band, May studied physics and mathematics at Imperial College in London, graduating with a BSc, an honors degree, and ARCS, I don't know what these are, British degrees of some sort, I don't know, with upper second class honors. From 70 to 74, he studied for a PhD at Imperial College, studying reflected light from interplanetary dust and velocity of dust in the plane of the solar system. But then when Queen starts having international success in 74, I'm reading straight out of Wikipedia here, he abandons his doctoral studies.
I know, what waste. What a waste.
No, but then he goes back. So then when the band gets worse, like back in October, so he then, in October 2006, he re-registers, and it turns out this field he was working in with this interplanetary dust stuff, at one point it's referred to as zodiacal dust cloud.
I'd never heard of that.
Well, the zodiac, I think of as astrology, not astronomy.
No.
But obviously it has other meanings, but that's fine. It sounds funny.
It is a term used in proper astronomy.
So he goes back and he gets this doctorate. You know, he finishes up his doctorate. So I'm going to say that this guy's legit.
Oh, no, I think he is legit.
You know, like,
I think Peter Gabriel's just hooking up to the latest cause. He's done hunger, he's done Africa, he's done it. Or Peter Gabriel is like cause support for hire. So if you've got a cause, you go, if you're a musician and you want a cause, you call up Peter Gabriel and go, look, are you available to come down to talk about, you know, the dangers of bedwetting? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel Peter Gabriel a little bit, who I love, is a little bit sort of a...
I'm trying to look at his personal section and see if he is related to James May, but it doesn't seem to say.
No, he's not.
What about Theresa May?
No, I don't think he's related to her either.
It's a lot of Mays. Is there many Mays in Britain? Maybe I didn't realize that.
Well, yeah, it's quite a common name, isn't it?
It's not common here.
Yeah, but you're not in Britain here. You're in America here.
Yeah, but there's certain, you know, Smiths are common on both sides. Jones are common on both sides, but why May?
I think May is quite common. Yeah. Did you also know, here's a bit of movie trivia for you. Did you also know that there is a Brian May also in music who was a film composer who did the music for the original Mad Max trilogy?
I did not know that.
There you go. Look at that.
They don't have to, like, in the movies, take, like, separate names.
Well, obviously, I think he's interested in space because, remember, he worked with Freddie Mercury. Da-dum. Do you get it? Oh, look at that, yeah.
This was borderline to me not paying attention again, and I was almost going to be...
No, that was a really good joke, too, and you're busy playing with your computer. Our listeners don't want to just sit and listen.
I was running a quick search. Are James May of Top Gear fame and Brian May of Queen fame related? There's a bit of controversy over this topic, and people seem to say that they may share the same father, while others say they're not related at all.
Oh, I'm one of those who says they're not related.
Quora, like the Quora website that has, like, anybody can put a question. But
Quora is like a Reddit for people who don't know what they're talking about.
I mean, either they're related or they're not related kind of thing.
But they're not related.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, they're not related.
They didn't meet each other until Brian...
There you go. If they were related, they would have known
somebody
each
says,
other.
Granted, they do look similar.
Oh. Yeah, anyway. So anyway, there was Asteroid Day, and I feel like we haven't given it its due, but maybe next year. We will actually podcast on Asteroid Day and give it, do a whole show.
You know, we spent some time talking about our live show, and I was trying to decide if Asteroid should fit into our live show, because that might be something to get fired people up on.
What invite one down to the show?
I haven't figured it out. But it just seems like it could be a topic you could deal with.
Well, let me tell you something. If Avenging Angel wants to come to the live show, I'm more than happy to throw a few rocks at her after the way she's been chucking rocks at us. Boom. Let's move on. Next story.
Next story George Clooney and tequila.
You sent me this article from the Washington Post. Because I wanted to save on paper, I didn't print the whole article, and so I don't know who the writer of the article is. We will attribute him or her.
It was
Anyway, they wrote an article. I'll let you.
Katie Mettler.
Katie Mettler. So we will link that. George Clooney, apparently, and I'm going to quickly sort of jump around on this. George Clooney and two of his friends had been distributed. I don't want to use the word distributing because that's sort of the crux of it. Had the big tequila fans and had basically been getting tequila from Mexico that was sort of unique and really fit their taste. Like, it wasn't a brand. They'd found some and they'd been giving it to their friends. And then they were told that, look, you guys are moving this stuff in such great numbers that it's no longer, hey, you know, you've now got to get officially involved. And so they've got involved in a brand of tequila called Diageo.
No. That's the company at the bottom. Casamigo.
Maybe. That's right. Yeah.
Roughly, like it's sort of a Spanglish version of House of Friends.
Yeah.
Because Casamigo, I don't think that's a phrase that's ever used in Spanish. But
I actually went to Taco Bell once and had a Casamigo.
Yeah. So, but to be clear, so it's they did this. This dates back to I think 2013 or stuff is the first press I saw about it, and they had done this bit where like, oh, let's make more tequilas, and a bunch of the articles say, well, not totally clear. Because one of the people involved in it is a liquor impresario entrepreneur. Like, it's not like literally like you and I started like get somebody to send us a little customized tequila. Come and they said they went down there and they sampled a bunch of things. In any event, they come up with their own type of tequila. They call it Casamigo. It has been a commercial brand of its own since then, since I think 2013.
Yes.
But Diageo, I don't know how to pronounce it, is one of these multinational companies, which I have here somewhere. They own a whole bunch of different brands, but the biggest ones you know are, this print is too small. Smirnoff, Captain Morgan's, Bailey's, Tanqueray, Guinness, Johnny Walker.
So they
are all part of that. I mean, they're one of the international behemoths.
Yeah.
So they just bought this tequila brand for $1 billion. Okay. Well, technically $700 million with the possible earnouts of $300 million, depending upon how well they do over the next 10 years.
I'm going to quote Clooney via the article by Katy Perry.
I got to go up to the top again. It's Katie Mettler.
Mettler. So I don't know. I thought Katie Mettler. Says here, quote, "We didn't just slap our names onto some glue and try to talk people into drinking it."
What does the glue reference mean?
Unquote, Clooney said in an interview with Architectural Digest. Quote, "It's what we drink."
Architectural Digest.
Let me read it again. So, quote, "We didn't just slap our names onto some glue and try to talk people into drinking it." Unquote, Clooney said in an interview with Architectural Digest in 2013. Quote, "It's what we drink whenever we're at the house." So he must have been doing a feature about, look, this is my house.
No, maybe.
To Architectural Digest, and then someone goes, oh, what about the tequila you've got there, George?
I still don't know what the glue reference means. Is that
well, what he's saying is, look, this isn't, to be fair.
No. I understand what he's saying. It's not, but why the word glue there? Well, like, it's maybe, not made of horse parts or something? I don't understand.
That's what he's trying to say. He says, I'm not shoveling you anything with my name on it. This is legit tequila. I think this is the position, because as the article points out, Clooney and his buddies, they don't just drink tequila. They are tequila connoisseurs.
Right.
Like, it's their thing. They're very, you know, like a wine enthusiast, like you and I about beer. They're not just glugging it back and, hey, mm-hmm. You know, they're heavily into it. And so I think he wanted to say, this is the real deal. So, some people have rated it.
Well, so the people who are involved in it, this guy who's the liquor entrepreneur is actually the wife of Cindy Crawford, and then there's a third guy who doesn't get mentioned in these recent articles, but he's in the older article, so maybe he got bought out or something, Mark something or other, but $1 billion. But I'm going to guess that that's not all falling to them because they don't produce it. Like, they had to go into a deal with the producer of it. You know, they don't own a factory anywhere, to my
knowledge.
They're
a middleman.
Yeah, right. They're putting a branding and the sampling and all that. And apparently they're supposed to stay on and do a bunch of promotions and all that.
I think maybe, too, they probably got involved in helping, because apparently it was a tequila that they, for want of a better word, sort of discovered. Like, it was, I think it was a small local brand. So I would imagine their financial investment is helping the tequila brewer. I don't know if that's the right word for tequila.
Distiller.
Helping a distiller go, look.
Yeah, we were going to talk a little bit about.
You've got a product here and we can help bump it up and, you know, help you generate more and make more money, all this type of thing. And, you know, for Clooney, who we're big fans of. I'm happy for him because, I mean, his career is definitely on the rocks. Oh, God, I'm dropping puns everywhere.
Apparently you don't drink this stuff on the rocks, though.
Oh, you don't? But still, that's a liquor joke, isn't it? On the rocks.
I'm trying to find...
Because his last movies have sucked.
So, just to give you an idea, pricing-wise, looks like fifth of it. So, first of all, tequila, by the way, just for anybody who doesn't know, Mexican liquor, it's made from...
That's disgusting. I have a gag reflex when I even think about it.
Well, you haven't clearly had good tequila then.
No, but I've had a bad experience
with it. Yeah, well, that's the thing most of us have. Like, you know, in college, it was the Cuervo Gold stuff, which is, like, just add coloring to make it gold. It's just basically...
I just think
basic
it's
liquor.
Nasty.
So anyway, it's made from blue agave plant, which is like a, it looks like a, it's not a cactus, like a big thing that you find in the woods, but it's got these fronds that go off and holds on to moisture. It apparently has a very sugar rich heart. As far as we could tell, we're looking up, isn't made into any foods. It's really just for this purpose.
I think
nobody uses it for food, but I don't think it's like,
no, but I think it is a product, you know, agave. I think they do have sodas. It's something we should have researched. I think it is used in,
you know, probably because it's got a bunch of sugar in it. Yes. So it probably, I mean, that's the thing. It's sort of like a Mexican, it's really a small area. I don't think this stuff grows all over the place. It's really down in Mexico is where all this is focused around.
It's like French champagne.
Right. So they make it's a subcategory of mezcal, is the broader category of things made of agave. This is just blue agave. It's a particular type of plant there. Like any of the other liquors, we've talked about it when we talked about the whiskey distilling, is you take it and you ferment the sugar liquid that you results from that, and then you boil it off and you turn it into harder liquor, and it maintains some of the flavors. It comes out like all these liquors, just like whiskey. It generally starts clear, so when you get a silver tequila, it's unaged. It's basically like it just came right out of the distillery. Then when the next steps are reposado, which means rested, and añejo, which is aged. And that has to do with how much time it sits in barrels, whereas where it picks up its brown color, which is, again, just the same as whiskey, is where you get your brown is from its aging in barrels. I don't know what kind of wood or what they do with it, but...
The processes are similar, though, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, just like any... Scotch and everything else is the same thing. You know, you're taking a clear liquor that you then put into there, and it ends up picking up the color. I'm not a big tequila drinker, but I have had... Other than the bad experiences in childhood, I've had some tequila recently. I mean, it's impressive stuff. I mean, we may have to, based on what you said there, we may have to have a little separate thing where we deal with tequilas.
Yeah, it'll be separate because you'll be on your own doing that. You can do one of these shows on your own.
You did the sips of whiskey with me. You could do sips of tequila. Anyway, so I went to when we were up in Chicago, we went to a Mexican restaurant. It was before we were going to Second City Comedy.
Yeah.
And... it was like a weekday night because we were taking a little impromptu vacation, and the restaurant was not very full. It was a very nice restaurant, but it was not a lot of people there. And this waiter took us through a tour of tequilas. The other member of the household, Atlantic Voice household, did it in margaritas. I had them just all neat.
Oh.
And they were fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, I mean... It made the comedy show a lot funnier. So by the time we got there, we were pretty well. But it was the tequilas are fantastic. And you could really taste, because we went through a progressive thing again where it was lighter things than with heavier taste. And you could really taste the differences in the different types. I found a greater variation in those than I do in whiskeys. And so I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Anyways, they sold their tequila brand. You're very complimentary. It seems to me, you know.
I can't tell.
It's just sort of gloating. Oh, you mentioned the reviews. So the reviews are pretty, like, they think it's the greatest thing ever.
No, the reviews are not. No, like, but there were some positive reviews.
Yeah, well, so one in the Post article, which I may have mistakenly closed down already, the Post article lists, it's Long Island Tequila Lou or something like that.
Long Island Lou Tequila. Rated it artificially sweet and overpriced. On the other hand, Drink Spirits rated Casamigos Añejo Tequila as, quote, dangerously drinkable. I don't know what it means.
Well, see, but that, you know,
very much a gateway tequila, which I'm not sure is really the phraseology you should use for any of these things. A perfect spot for folks who have never considered sipping their tequila straight to start.
It's tequila.
Tequila. Well, I'm trying to say it, you know, with a...
Tequila?
With a filler. Yeah, tequila.
I don't think that's... How do you pronounce it? Anyway, So first of all, I mean, there's a bunch of things to unpack there. For one, Long Island Lou, like,
yeah, who's Long Island Lou? Really?
But I would tell you,
it's a blogger.
If you go to that web, if you go to the article, blogger. There's a link. Okay. I mean, well, but that's when it comes to discrete product reviews. I mean, putting aside whether an individual has taste, but if you could look at a bunch of those, I mean, this guy has spent a lot of time trying out different tequilas.
Okay.
So he says, whatever. But, and then the second review, it says, on the other hand, not to put the boot in on Katie, you know, after we said her name a couple of times. I think that's a little bit of a misleading turn there because the review isn't very positive. Like, it isn't like, oh, on the other hand, it's dangerously drinkable. I'm not sure that's a positive review. That may be on the same hand as Lou's review, because what they're basically saying is,
look, this ain't great, but it's not bad.
It's like a, well,
hey, if you want to get into it,
it's like the way a Zima, which we'll have to talk about later, is a gateway drink. You know, like these, they're points of entry for people, but it's not really sophisticated quality stuff. It's easily drinkable.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is the brand is expected to exceed 170,000 cases by the end of 2017, which I think is nothing to shake a stick at.
No,
but it's a lot of worms. But
what
do you mean,
frankly, relative? Oh, they don't have the worms in there.
Oh, they don't? No, then that's not a real tequila, brand. Then, is it? Okay. Only if you have the little worm in there.
So anyway, that's George. That might be a bit of a gimmick there.
Okay.
Yeah, good for George.
Good for George. Yeah, because like I say, his career's been on the rocks a little bit, so he needs something else to get coming out. He's had the kids.
Big problem. He's really
scraping to get by. All right, the segue is, if you're the sort of person who drinks your alcohol through a straw, then you could be in trouble. Because in the Washington Post, an article by Daryl Fears in the health and science section, it said a campaign to eliminate plastic straws is sucking in thousands of converts.
Yeah. So it starts off talking about this kid. And at first when I read it, I thought it was like this kid started one of these things. Oh, look, this kid started this grassroots effort to like reduce the number of straws out there. But really, he's just the point of entry for the article. This effort has been underway before he was and separate from him. But there's a lot of talk about that. So plastic straws. The gist of this is there's a horrible... We obviously, there's a lot of trouble with plastic waste generally, but they're saying straws are unusually bad because there's just so many used, they're excessively used, and because they're so small and light, they blow away, they end up in the oceans. There's this video they said they talked about with it, one stuck in the nose of a sea turtle where they had like this whole thing to get it out, which led to a bunch of people saying, oh my God, this is horrible, we have too many straws and the like. And I will say, I've been to beach, it's not that often that you go to a beach that's really horribly fouled with garbage, but when you are, straws are one of the most popular things you'll find there. You know, it's not
true,
like,
isn't it?
And I think that's because of what it is. You know, it's easy that it blows away, it gets out of the waste stream pretty easily, or people maybe don't care, and it just sort of lives out there like regular straw would, you know, and it bounces around the places and doesn't decompose.
To be fair, it's also because it's quite a low profile product. Example: If you drop a plastic container and a straw on the ground and they line separately, you'll bend over and pick up the bottle.
Yeah,
you're not gonna ooh, let me get the straw. You're just gonna leave it.
Yeah.
And so therefore at that moment it becomes more pervasive because it's not getting picked up. I'm not a straw guy. So when I read this, I'm thinking, there you go. Well, yay.
You and me both. I mean, I will say,
I always take the straw out when it comes to
restaurant. How many times you go to a restaurant and they bring you a straw and a soda? And I'm like, what? Why do I don't have any interest in having the straw. Now, there are like some people will tell me, like the ladies of the world will tell me that a straw is less likely to foul up your lipstick or lip treatment or whatever you're doing at that time. Somebody else told me that, you know, like coffee and things, you stains your teeth. Not that you drink a lot of hot coffee, which will lead to another question.
Around but to those hot drinks.
The stuff like the straw basically will get the food past your teeth, and so you're not drinking the liquid through your teeth. Which apparently, like on sodas and things, might be better. Yeah, I don't know, but the straws do seem to be highly excessively used. I even wonder, you know, when they give you a straw, it's on the side and a little paper thing. When you don't use that,
what happens to it?
I think it's just thrown out in the garbage.
Yeah. Well, I noticed, let me walk you through my Friday night. So before going to the film Baby Driver, and again, this is now from the perspective of using a straw, we went to a Tex-Mex restaurant.
Right.
First thing they do in any restaurant, they bring you water, which I think any good restaurant should do. All the glasses have straws in them.
Yeah.
So I take out the straw because I don't need a straw.
Yeah.
When we went to the cinema.
That's why they invented glasses.
When we went to the cinema, I don't like straws anyway. So they had one of those soda machines, you know, with the nice digital display, yeah, and you can pick one.
You can mix together your different types of sodas.
Very confusing. Far too many options. Just give me that. I'm pressing low calorie this, diet that. Do you want to add this?
It's like, you know, they have those telephones for elderly people that have less buttons. That's what you need is one. Like, here's the elderly button. It just says Coke.
Coke, yeah.
Yeah.
So I take my soda for the movie theater, and I refrained from putting a top on, a lid, and refrained from using a straw. And when I'm sitting in my chair in a movie theater, I am drinking it like a glass.
See, that's kind of dangerous, though.
It is dangerous, because then I got elbowed and it went everywhere, and I'm swearing like nobody's business.
Or you're just making that up for this.
No, I'm like, I got angry because I was drinking it, and you know, it's like in a movie theater, someone's walking by and jostling around, then I spilled it on my front, and I'm thinking, well, I should have used the straw.
Maybe you should use a straw, right?
So I don't use a straw. Interesting thing, too, when we talk now about those, the article talked about those little coffee stirrers.
Yeah, well, the little straws. Well,
and that's the thing. Oh, I have a hang up about those, too.
The wood ones?
No. The wood ones, I'll use.
Yeah.
But those little plastic ones that are like mini straws.
Yeah.
Like, they actually are hollow.
Or, like, you know, often comes in cocktails, too. Like, yeah, there's a bunch of, like, little, the article makes the point that there's some weird incongruities in how we do these beverages. So, for example, like, if I get a liquor drink on the rocks or something like that, they don't put a straw in it. But if it's a mixed drink, you put a straw in it as if you need the straw. And who uses the straw? It's not like you're sitting there stirring it up because it wasn't stirred up enough in the first place.
And those little straws don't stir well.
Yeah.
That's why I like the wooden stirrers better when I make my coffee in, like, you know, 7-Eleven or wherever.
That should be a thing. Like, the places that serve these fancy cocktails should switch to wood Twizzlers instead of plastic.
But why put any Twizzlers in at all?
Well, I'm just saying if they felt the need that it was from a stylistic standpoint, they had to have it there. But you were starting to say about the mixtures and the the other thing they noticed was, like, you drink a regular coffee, you drink it out of a cup. You don't get a straw with your regular coffee. But when you get an iced coffee, they put a straw in it.
Yeah.
Now, I was talking to somebody about that a couple days ago and realizing that the iced coffee comes in that plastic thing like a soda instead of being in the paper cups that the coffees come in the first place. I don't know why do they do it all totally different. Why can't I get an iced coffee in a paper cup just like that? I mean, I know it has to be bigger because it's got ice in it, but why can't I just get it in a regular paper cup?
But isn't there there actually is a reason for that. If you put ice in a paper cup and let it sit there for a while, the paper cup loses its rigidity quicker. See, this is now, I'm going to challenge science advisors.
I guess because it sweats.
I'm going to challenge science advisors.
When you think about liquid, the liquid inside is the liquid inside. It's always the liquid inside. The only thing that can be different is if it sweats because the condensation on the outside of a plastic thing will run off, whereas the condensation on the outside of a paper.
And then you pick up your paper cup and suddenly it's weaker. So science advisor of the pod, please get onto this, and by the next show.
Well, one of the things they talked about, like the article talks about, is the original invented straw was paper.
Yeah.
And I remember still not usually having paper straws, but paper straws did still exist in the 70s and 80s.
Paper straws, and then there were waxed paper straws.
Ooh.
Did you ever have one of those? Well, no, it's just a light thing of wax, and it holds its rigidity. And then you had those straws with the little bendy bit at the top, so they had that little, like, accordion thing. They were great. I used to like them.
Yeah, I always wanted one of those crazy – maybe you didn't have these in England, the crazy straws that you could order – like, they have ads on the...
What do you mean? You mean the ones... Yeah, we had them.
The plastic thing that went around, like, 12 swirls and stuff like that.
Third world country. We did have them.
I don't know. I just mean, like, listen. not every TV show is... Like, I don't know. I guarantee I could find some things from my childhood that never made it across the pond.
But not, like, eating it.
But I wasn't sure a crazy straw would make it over to Britain. That was what I really wanted.
Okay.
But although, I mean, how the heck do you clean a crazy straw, right?
That's the thing, isn't it?
Like, even the regular... So we have some... reusable cups around the house that have straws in them. But even those make me nervous in terms of getting it clean. And senior scientist of the pod, I'm pretty sure he has the stainless steel straws, which is another new thing. Like, if your kids are burning through straws, just get them stainless steel. But it's not like you can wash them too easily. I did kind of figure out that the bigger ones of those you can put on a tine in the like, you shouldn't lie it sideways in the dishwasher because the water is going through it. But if you can put it on a tine, then the water is going through it.
Well, but from that perspective, this is why a straw is one of those things. It's really disposable or nothing, isn't it? Because it is an impractical, reusable object.
Right.
So I think the point I'm making here is, you see a lot of people burn through, like, plastic cups and paper cups. But ultimately, you know, you can go to coffee shops and a good coffee shop will say, you know, you're having it here, and they'll put it in a nice cup for you. Because ultimately, in terms of our ecological footprint, right. It's healthier. But a straw, yeah, I mean, I've seen those fun straws, but because they're a nightmare to clean, so people just end up with, you know, boxes of straws around the house, especially if you've got kids. And I guess I do, I mean, I get it with kids, as my own cinema experience taught, that if you're not careful, you're spilling stuff
down your front. Well, that's true. Like, kids are sort of, you forget, like, kids are just sort of inherently klutzy, and so having some sort of cover and straws can be helpful in that regard.
I get it. I remember you having a straw, you know, in high school when you got your milk.
Yeah, it isn't like, you know, when a toddler's a toddler, you give them a sippy cup, obviously, and you don't have, they don't go immediately to open glasses, and then you try to transition. But it's not like it's an instantaneous thing. Like, it's not like learning to ride a bike, and now you don't have to worry about it anymore. It's a lot of stumbling in between the two stages.
But I do think, you know, one of the points of this article was, there seems the straws seem to have this almost decorative use.
That's the big thing. I do think it would be, so I may be getting ahead of myself, but I feel like there's lessons to be drawn. This has been a pretty educational podcast underneath it all.
Oh yeah.
And things that people can do, takeaways, right? One, turn down the extra straws. If you don't need a straw, tell them why you give me a straw, kind of thing.
Yeah, but if you're the sort of person who says no ice in my drink,
go ahead and use the straw if you like the straw, but you know, when these excessive straws come out there, and that's one of the article basically says, listen, I'm not on a crusade against everybody ever having a plastic straw at all, but we could reduce the number of plastic. By the way, there's a stat in there that's, what's the number of billion of straws that it claims that people use a day?
I'm desperately looking for it here. Although, you know, it's over well
going. Which I cannot believe is true. Americans use a 500 million straws every day, at least according to an estimate by Straw Free, based on information from straw manufacturers. There's no chance that's true.
No way.
Like the fact that the article even says, at least according to this, because the person who wrote that was like, what? They don't use a 500 million straws a day when everyone in the country uses two straws every single day.
Well, what they're also counting it, and I see, and this is the interesting thing, those plastic straws that are stirrers, they're not really straws. Yeah, do you ever see one? Do you ever see anyone drinking out of the little one? No.
No, I've seen people.
But what I'm saying is, for the sake of the statistic, they're counting those as well.
Yeah, well, still, even at that, I mean, like, how many mixed drinks do you have a day? That's 500 million straws is a lot of straws.
Oh, yeah, I'm just...
So lessons of the podcast today. Turn down straws.
That many straws could wrap around the Earth 2.5 times.
Yeah.
Which maybe there could be some way to defend us from asteroids with all these best.
Lesson number two, boom. Worry about asteroids.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Lesson number three, go ahead and try tequila, but maybe not George Clooney's.
And not through a straw.
Lesson number four, be aware of the avenging angel.
Yes. And with that, this has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.